Welcome to Fun and Fundraising, everybody, the podcast where we talk with people behind top nonprofit galas and signature fundraising events to showcase how they positively transform their communities. I am your host, Rob Giardinelli, and today I'm really excited to have two special guests on. We have Brandon Bell, who is the general manager, and Suzanne Sipple, who is the director of individual giving for an organization called DaCamera. And they have a gala coming up in May that really is one of the fun, unique, cool, and hip events in Houston every year. So I'm really excited to get their insights on the organization and what they really do to craft a really special bespoke experience for their guests that has them coming back year after year. So with that, Brandon, Suzanne, welcome. And we're so excited to have you both on as guests today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. So Brandon, I'm going to address the first question to you. Can you tell us a little bit about the mission of DaCamera?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So DaCamera, we are a chamber music and jazz presenter here in Houston. Our mission is to inspire individuals and enrich communities through diverse and inventive musical experiences. And we do that through a number of ways. We do around 20 to 22 main stage performances each year. So we bring internationally renowned artists to Houston for performances. And we're also very active in the local Houston community through our education and community initiatives department. We have a DaCamera Young Artist Program, a pre-professional training program for college-age instrumentalists, composers, and vocalists. And those young artists are YAs, as we call them. They'll do around 600 events over the course of the season throughout Greater Houston. That's school, lessons being taught in schools, free community concerts. So there's a lot going on here at DaCamera.
Wow, that's really cool. So when you were saying, you know, that you have like about 20 different concerts you do throughout, you know, throughout the year, are those typically done in a single space? Or when you say Greater Houston, you go to multiple different venues to do the performances?
Yeah, so we are in multiple venues. Generally, we're in three venues here in Houston. This year we'll be in four, I think it is. But primarily, the majority of our performances are downtown, either at the Cullen Theater, at the Wortham Theater Center. That's where we have all of our jazz concerts and some of our classical chamber music concerts as well. We also are downtown in Zilka Hall at the Hobby Center for the Performing Arts, where we do some of our chamber music concerts there as well. We're very fortunate that we have a longstanding relationship with the Menil Collection. Our office is actually we're located on the Menil campus here in Houston. So we have a very special series that happens at the Menil Collection as well. The museum is closed Monday and Tuesdays. So we'll do around four or five concerts programs a year at the Menil Collection on Monday and Tuesday nights. It's just such a special environment for our audiences to be in that space, to hear the world's greatest performers and music and the artists as well. I mean, they just love being in that space and just the intimacy. So that's where the majority of our concerts happen. We also, on occasion, we do concerts elsewhere. Later this spring in April, we're collaborating with the Shepherd School of Music at Rice University on a world premiere project that will happen at the Rice's new opera hall at the Shepherd School of Music. So yeah, we're kind of all over the place here in town, which is, it keeps us on our toes, but it's great.
Well, I love that, you know, you all engage with multiple, and Houston just has so many wonderful world-class facilities. And the fact that, you know, for me, one hallmark of a great organization is to kind of keep your donors guessing. And the fact that you've got multiple different world-class venues that you can go to, because the experience is going to be different at the Wortham than it will be at the Menil. And I think it's really cool that you're able to bring that to your patrons too. And we'll talk a little bit about the fundraising aspect of it and the gala aspect of it in a little bit, but I think that's really, you know, really cool. And I really appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, no, it keeps them on their toes, keeps us on our toes. Yeah, every
Absolutely. So, you know, the next question is, I want to turn to Suzanne for it. And, you know, I always like talking with people about how they get involved with an organization initially, you know, because, you know, it's, you all work for, you know, for the organization. So I'd love to hear, you know, first with Suzanne, then with Brandon, how each of you initially got involved with Dotcomra.
Well, for me, it's kind of funny. I came to Dotcomra from the visual arts nonprofits. And I had just been working with someone on different projects, like, you know, sharing tips and advice, and we had become friends. And I was on my way home from work one day, and she texted me and said, "Do you want to come work with me?" And told me Dotcomra was hiring. And I had been aware of them in the community through their jazz concerts. And so I immediately started looking into it, and I really loved that a lot of what they did, I felt, mirrored what I had experienced in the visual arts, but for the performing arts, just such as the Young Artist Program, you know, the ECI things. And so I just got really excited about it. And I have a family history of musicians in the family. And so I was finally able to make my father proud. Yes. He immediately stalked Dotcomra's website, and I had to be like, "Dad, just chill. I don't have the job yet. Just calm down."
That's great. I appreciate you sharing that. But there's one thing in there that you said that was really important. And that is, you know, you already knew a person at Dotcomra already when they reached out to you. So talk about the importance of, you know, two things really. Talk about the importance of networking in terms of really creating opportunities for yourself. If you want to start with that, and then maybe, you know, after that, you know, dabble a little bit into what the biggest difference and challenge for you has been between a visual and a performing arts and how you do your role.
Oh, sure. You know, the networking portion is kind of interesting because I wouldn't consider myself a really good networker. But what it was is I was applying for a grant through the TCA. And it was one I had successfully received before, but I wanted more money. And one of their suggestions was talk with people who have also received this funding. And that's how I met Sarah Brown Rankin, who is now Dotcomra's Director of Institutional Giving. And so we had met for lunch, and we talked about our experiences with that, you know, specific funder. And then we just kept in touch. Because I'm sure, as you know, it's an odd little job we have as fundraisers, and you need someone else who understands you when you need to be like, "Oh my God, what is happening?" And so that's just, I mean, that's really what happened, was I just followed the suggestions from TCA. And I said, "Hey, you've applied for this. What was your experience? Is there anything you can, like, what, you know, what don't I know? I don't know," if that made sense.
You know what you know, and you don't know what you don't. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I would say the biggest challenge for me coming from visual arts to performing arts is that, visual artists are easier to handle in the sense that, you know, the performing arts, it's about performances. It's about instances and events. And working in the visual arts, you may be working on a project, but this exhibition is going to last 3 months. And so there are just different ways of working. You know, it's a different way of building interest than, you know, when it's one evening with Branford Marsalis versus, you know, you've got Christina Mickhorst for, you know, 2.5 months. But I have found it amazing. You know, I worked at the visual arts a very long time. And so I really wanted to learn more. I like how I get to be backstage. That's the best part of, for me, is hanging out. I take a picture of myself on stage for every performance.
Yeah, she's got her collection of
selfies. Oh, that's awesome. All right, so Suzanne, what's your Instagram handle so people can find that?
What? Oh, it's the Baron Von Oren.
Baron Von Oren. We will make sure to include that in the notes, people, so that people know how to spell that.
Okay.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. And I thank you for sharing your journey with that. I think it's really, you know, everyone's got to a different and unique path to it. And I love that, you know, you made your dad proud, but too, that you challenge yourself with joining this organization to do a different medium and, you know, really allowing yourself to grow artistically and creatively in addition to professionally. I think that's great. And Brandon, I'd love to hear, you know, and I know you've been with the organization longer than Suzanne, but I'd love for you to explain how you initially got involved with this organization.
Yeah. So as we've mentioned, ACOMRA has a young artist program. And I'm a classically trained percussionist. That's kind of what I did before I moved into an office. And so I did my master's and my DMA, my Doctor of Musical Arts at the Shepherd School at Rice. And when I was doing my DMA at Rice, I actually, I was also a ACOMRA young artist. So I applied, auditioned for the program, and I was accepted. This is 10 years ago at this point. But before that, you know, I was in Houston for a while, and I'd gone to a lot of ACOMRA concerts just because, I mean, you know, I think what we do is really unique in the city, and it's at such a high level. So I was familiar with ACOMRA, one of my best friends, he was the best man at my wedding. He was actually the director of education here at ACOMRA while I was a young artist. So I had all these connections with the organization. And so I was a young artist from 2013 to 15 or 12 to 14, something like that. So that's how I kind of really became involved with ACOMRA. I have to say the company line is that I met my wife in the ACOMRA Young Artist Program. She's a pianist. So we either met here at ACOMRA or at Rice at the Shepherd School. And nobody really knows, but the company lies that we met here at ACOMRA. ACOMRA has been a part of my life for a long time now. And so I was a young artist, until 2015 or so. And then the person that I mentioned earlier, the director of education and community initiatives, he was leaving the organization in 2017 and asked if I would be interested in applying. I was working and I was still finishing up my doctorate, but I was working at another Houston nonprofit at the time. Initially, I wasn't interested. I don't really know why, but it just didn't seem like it was where I wanted to go. But then something clicked, and I changed my mind. I said, yeah, I'll apply. And that was right when Harvey hit. So I had applied like right when Harvey hit, and, you know, obviously it was just bedlam, you know, across the entire city.
For lack of a better term, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, you know, it was just nuts everywhere. And, and here I was waiting to hear, well, you know, did you get my application? What's going on with my, yeah. So, so then I became ACOMRA's Director of Education and Community Initiatives in 2017. And I was in that role. I started in that role. And then about a year later, they gave me the additional title of Artistic Administrator. So, you know, not only was I interacting with the Houston community, but then I was also interacting with, artist agencies, artist managers, booking agents, things like that. And then in 2021, you know, it was perfect timing. They're like, well, the pandemic is kind of waning, so do you want to become GM? I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, sure. So I've been general manager since 2021. And yeah, I just love the organization. I think what we do is really amazing. I put our programming up against, you know, really any presenter in the country. Our staff is really top notch. They're amazing people. So I'm super happy to be here.
Well, what I appreciate, thank you for sharing that. Cause what I appreciate about your story is that you started as a recipient and worked your way into the organization, or the organization saw something in you that they really were like, you know, you're really simpatico with them. And I loved hearing your journey about how really it's like a seed that grew into a tree or a sapling that grew into a tree, because really you kind of grew kind of with the city of Houston and the organization, because Houston's such a dynamic city and a lot's changed over the last decade. It was really interesting. And I appreciated hearing your journey in terms of that. So I think that, that's really cool. And I have one question for you two, and I'd love for you both to answer. So how do you utilize, you know, and maybe Suzanne, you can start with answering this, but how do you utilize your visual arts background into the performing space? Like, how have you found that you've been able to take, you know, a certain set of, you know, certain set of artistic skills and really help elevate a different medium of artistic skills?
You know what? That's one thing I do. Well, one thing I know how to do. But my background in the visual arts was very holistic. And I would bet I'm one of the few people, well, I know it was the only person at my former position, and maybe the only one of the few people here that has a lot of in-depth experience with every aspect of an organization. And so I didn't come here as a fundraiser who just did fundraising. I had experience running an educational department. I had experience running a gallery. And because of that, I think I can take those skills with the performing arts and not just see it as, okay, well, we need to raise money for the Joshua Redman concert this January 26th. It's, okay, well, how does this figure into our educational programming? How does this figure into the music writ at large? You know, what was his development? How did the young artists play in? And that was something that was very important to me in the visual arts, was always finding those various connections so that people would really understand what goes into art. A lot of people don't, or have a very romanticized vision of what it means to be an artist, whatever kind it is. And I think that since I really have that holistic understanding of what goes into creating the arts, presenting the arts from, you know, from production to presenting, I think that's just really helped because I can connect people to it in a way that is authentic.
Absolutely. I love that answer and how you're able to take skills and transfer them to different mediums. And it's really important, especially if you're in the fundraising community, to really kind of understand one, your audience, and two, how you can take your past skills to put a unique light and spin on it. And Brandon, I love, your point of view as a GM, overseeing everything. How do you find working with folks like Suzanne or maybe people who have other disciplines in the creative space to really help elevate your organization and your programs and your fundraising overall?
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, our team at Decamera, we're small but mighty. It's a 10-person staff, and each person, really brings an expertise to the table. I'll be the first to admit that when I became GM, I had worked in a number of performing arts nonprofits, but it was always a very specific task that I was doing. And so when I became GM, there was a lot that, it was a very steep learning curve for me. And, we're going on, it's about 2.5 years now. And only recently have I really started to kind of feel like I have my sea legs under me. I really leaned on people like Suzanne, people like Sarah Braun Rankin, who she mentioned earlier, that, it's they have their kind of lane that they are, that's why we hired them. That's why they're the experts at. And so I kind of lean on them to kind of, help me a lot, truly. I feel like I'm just kind of, sometimes I just feel like I'm kind of like quarterbacking, and I'm just kind of, allowing them the space to kind of do what they do best that will really elevate the entire organization.
That's a really great answer. And really, when we talk about this on the show, great organizations, great events, and this will be a good segue to talk about, the upcoming gala, but they're all ensembles. And it's really understanding the strength of each person in an ensemble that allows the whole experience, whatever it is, to be elevated.
Yeah, and that's a really great point that you bring up that I just completely missed. I shouldn't have. We always think of ourselves, because we bring in, the world's greatest ensembles to Houston, we really think of the staff as an ensemble, truly. That's when we're hiring for a new position, it's not just an interview with me or Sarah Rothenberg, our incredible artistic director. They go through and they meet the entire staff just so we can make sure that everybody is going to be able to work together and enhance each other. Yeah. So that's a great point that I missed. So thank you.
No worries. You actually said it. I just, I was being a coach, I guess, for a second there and just saying, so what I heard you say, Brandon, was, okay, so, you know, you brought up Sarah, and I want to talk a little bit about her a little bit, because I think it's one of the reasons why Dacamra is so beloved in Houston. You all have been fortunate to have her creative stewardship for the last 30 years. And how do you all think that continuity helps you attract not just patrons, but donors, not just to attract them, but also to maintain them and make sure that they're, you know, sustaining and they're giving for long periods of time? And with that, Suzanne, why don't you start with that question? Then Brandon, you can feel to add anything in after Suzanne speaks.
Sure. Yeah, I think there's a tremendous value in the fact that Sarah is one of the better pianists in the world. When she performs, people want to see her play. So when, and that's just setting aside her artistic vision for other performers. If we just focus on what she herself does, there, I think, kind of going back to my earlier mention of authenticity, that plays a huge role. I haven't been able to play music since I was in high school. I could not have that same impact.
Right.
But, and because she's run it long enough, a lot of our, I would say our legacy donors, our longest term donors, have also been able to interact with Sarah and see her perform and learn her artistic vision for a very long time. So they've seen it mature, they've seen it grow, and have personally experienced the fact that we have this outstanding track record of quality. And I think that's just a huge thing, because relationships take time, you know, and we all know this. So you can't replace 30 years of having someone on staff. And I would point out our marketing director, Leo Boucher, he's also been here a very long time. And when I speak to people in the community after they ask about Sarah, is Leo still there? And it's just funny when people feel that they know you, when there's a personal connection, that they're not just a number, it's impactful.
Fantastic. That was a great answer, Suzanne. And Brandon, do you have anything to add with that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I what Suzanne said was all absolutely correct. And, you know, I would just add that, you know, Sarah is, she's so intelligent about everything that she does. And, you know, that kind of, the audience is, they understand that, and they appreciate it. You know, Sarah always says that, you know, it's not a series of 25 concerts. It's, you know, she thinks of the season as one concert. And so, you know, when she and I are putting together the season, like right now we're putting together 24-25 season, you know, there are so many threads that kind of go through the entire season that, you know, half the time I'm just, you know, I'll step back and say, oh my God, Sarah, that's brilliant. Like, how did you weave this to this? But I mean, she's just a master at that. And, you know, the audiences, you know, our audience, you know, they're like I said earlier, they're very understanding and appreciative of that. They're very loyal. They're very trusting audience. You know, I think, you know, like I said earlier, that I put our programming up against anybody in the country. And there's actually a lot of latitude that our audience gives us, because they're so trusting, and they know that it's going to be whatever they go here. You know, if they're experiencing something at the Menil or, you know, downtown at the Wortham, they know it's going to be, you know, a first rate performance, and it's going to be a really transformative experience for them.
Fantastic. And you know, and speaking go ahead, Suzanne.
I just kind of wanted to add to what Brandon just said. One of our longtime subscribers and donors attended a performance of Serialism. It was the first time the ensemble Intercontemporain, forgive my pronunciation, performed in Houston. I loved it, but Serialism is a very, very specific genre of classical music, and it's not everyone's cup of tea. But what I loved about Nan was when she came out, I was like, what did you think? And she was like, well, it's not for me. And then she said, but you know, that's what I like. That's what I like about Dacamra. If I liked everything I heard, I wouldn't be hearing new music. She goes, it's fine. She goes, maybe not again, but it's fun. And so, but I like that, that we have an audience that they're up for challenging themselves, and it, maybe it's nothing. They're not going to buy the CD, but they're going to keep coming back to hearing new music, you know, very avant-garde and very modern.
You know, I'm glad we're talking about music here. And this is actually an excellent segue to kind of talk about, you know, the gala that's coming up. So I know that, you know, one of the big things is that you all will do a really splendid job, probably as good, if not the best in the state of Texas at doing this at your gala. But how do you all incorporate music, you know, the avant-garde stuff, the modern stuff, the classic stuff? How do you incorporate that into the event throughout the evening to help an array of donors connect to the cause, to allow them to either sustain, or if someone, you know, brought someone new to the, or, you know, that's not familiar with Dacomra, to give and be, you know, be a donor going forward? And for that, I'd like Brandon to start with that question.
Yeah. So for music at the gala, that's a great question. And actually Sarah and I are currently sorting out what the musical offerings are going to be in May. But you know, we do try to show we really want to bring the audience kind of everything that Dacomra is. We want to show them the breadth of everything that Dacomra does, that, you know, we're putting it on the main stage. We want to show a microcosm of that at the gala. And so what we've, and Suzanne will talk about this a little more in depth, but, you know, in the past, this will be our third iteration of the Dacomra kind of format as we've kind of landed on it over the past couple of years, where it's a music salons, excuse me, music salons and a jazz, sorry, let me mute myself one second.
Sure, no worries. Yeah, and Suzanne, sorry. While we let Brandon compose himself, and Suzanne, why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, the connection of music and how that really helps, helps you all create something really special for your guests.
Oh, absolutely. I have always been, I am adamant that fundraising needs to be mission-based. It's tempting to go off mission because you're basically throwing a big party, but I feel, and Dacomra feels, that like it has to be mission centric. And so what's evolved is, you know, it'll be the 2024 gala, Music Salons and Jazz Supper Club. When guests first arrive, we have a jazz performer. We've done a trio in the past that can vary. Almost always pulled from our young artist program, again, like layering our mission and the music. And then, so we do this downtown at the Four Seasons Hotel. So they have their ballroom, but then we have two other like very large event rooms where we hold classical salon performances. And so we basically split the crowd. Everybody goes in, hears a performance, about 10, 12 minutes. And then we flip them. We just move people back and forth. So they each get to hear a jazz performance, two classical performances, all again centered with our young artists. Brandon and Sarah usually figure out the repertoire for that. And then, like he said, we are working on signing our headliner. And then during dinner, you know, we bring in just a jazz headliner. We've had Tawanda in the past. Forgive me, I forget the original.
Deanna Linnell.
Yeah. So people love it. And so that's how we can also bring the main stage into the event.
Fantastic. That, you know, that was a really good synopsis by both of you, it just in terms of how you're able to incorporate different genres. And I especially like, Suzanne, you talking about how you've got multiple rooms that you're using within your event venue. You know, and we can kind of talk a little bit about the Four Seasons and how that works. But I like that, you know, it's a moving, I don't want to call it a moving target, but it allows people to really kind of feel energized and not feel bored in a particular or given space. So I really appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, let's talk a little bit, like I said, about the Four Seasons. So, you know, I know one of the things that people really look forward to at Dacomra is, you know, the culinary and wine pairing experiences that you've done in the past. And I know a lot of people are interested in that. How do you think that helps, you know, helps create and match the elegant mood and ambiance you're looking to create at an event? And Brandon, we'll go ahead and we'll start with you on that.
Yeah. So, you know, we've we've had some board members in the past who are really renowned chefs, and they were like Robert Del Grande of Cafe Annie. He was a DeCamera board member for many years. And, you know, we would, you know, lean on him to help us create the menu. I think the people who attend the gala know that, it's at the Four Seasons. So, you know, it's kind of, it's a heightened experience, right? They know they're going to get a good meal. They know that the wine will be good. Our board is heavily populated with wine lovers.
And that's not a bad thing. Any
no, I was just know, Brandon, say, by to any our, means. To our advantage. And to that point, we actually, one of the great things that we do at the gala is a wine poll. People can, for whatever, I think it's $75. Is that what it is, Suzanne? $75.
Yeah. And we solicit donations for bottles of wine with a minimum value of $75. So yeah, at your worst, you're getting what you donated. But last year we had a bottle that was worth over $400. So there's a lot of really good wine. And I know that I personally made out like a bandit.
So for those of us, this is such an innovative and fun thing. And, it's one of the things, you always kind of look for unique elements. And the wine poll is fascinating. So would one of you be able to explain kind of in a little bit more detail what that means for someone who, they know what wine means, they know what poll means, but they may not necessarily know what the whole term means, together?
You want
Suzanne,
that, Brandon?
Take...
Okay, I'll get it. Sorry. One of the most important things is we have the wine pool set up before anyone goes into the salons or the ballroom. So just the visual, I think, really helps. We've got all the wine bottles out. They donate $75. You reach into a bag and you pull out a cork. And then the number on the cork corresponds to, we've got all the wine bottles numbered.
Last year we had 55 or so bottles?
No, we ended up with 50.
Okay.
This year we're going for 60. I have taken on the difficult tasks of, gathering all those wine corks for the pull. So we're looking good there. people love it. They can, we'll hold on to them. Some people will get it at the end of the night. But last year, we saw all 50 were gone before the main courses hit the table.
Wow.
Yeah. So this year we're going to go for 60.
Yeah. And some people, they go, it's like a beeline. They go to the registration and they beeline to the wine pulls because, they want to get, hopefully get the best bottles that are there. There are people who, we hold some bottles for the end of the night to take home. Other people take them to their tables and have their wine with their dinner. People buy. Last year I got a bottle and I was back in line to get a second bottle. And the person, two or three people ahead of me, bought five bottles just like that. And that was it. He bought the last five and there was just a bunch of crestfallen people behind him in line. But
that's really cool. But that really kind of adds its element of fun. And the fact that, people will get out of line and then they'll go back and some people will take it home. Other people will share it with their table. I love that you're really allowing people to kind of have a bespoke experience with something. And if some people want instant gratification, they can do that. And others, for lack of a better term, want to savor it and save it for a special occasion, an anniversary dinner with their spouse, they're able to do so. So I love kind of the fun element of that because you've got the music going on that, people are, maybe captivated by, but you've also got, wine and foodies who are kind of looking for a different thing. And it creates this fun fusion of energies within an event. And you need all those different elements. So an event doesn't seem, pun intended, one note, but you've got all these fun different elements going on. I think that's really, really fascinating. And it kind of plays into what you guys all do as a theme. And that really is kind of a supper club theme. So talk about how the supper club theme and, Suzanne, let's start with you on this one, but talk a little bit about how a supper club theme can create more fun and excitement for your annual event.
Well, I think it just sets a great mood, particularly when, I mean, you're in a hotel ballroom. These are not special places. I mean, they're not. They're functional, but it's not like you're going into an architecturally significant space. So
Yes.
when you can transform that space, giving a very standard banquet room and really create the vibe of going into a supper club in New York with just more tables, I thought that was really important. And I think we did a great job with the color scheme, the way we had last year Tawanda, our headliner, the way we had that lit. Everything was just, it really was a wonderful sense. And people felt very comfortable. Like at a supper club, people were talking to each other and getting up and interacting. We made a lot of great connections that night for the organization because people really felt comfortable that they could relax. It wasn't very, it was cocktail, so it wasn't super formal. I think that really played a role as well. And we did get some thank yous that people didn't have to wear a tux. They preferred, the flexibility of cocktail. And I think that's just kind of what played into it. People had a really good time. They felt relaxed. They felt comfortable in the room, and they clearly got the vibe we were going for.
That
Yeah, and
sounds, yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Brandon.
I was just going to add that, to Suzanne's point, they're like people are comfortable, and I don't want to say it's informal, but it's kind of it's relaxing, right? I mean, we have people who go to any number of galas, any number of balls, and they say how different and engaging ours is, and our audience kind of like reflects that as well. Just it's a very diverse audience that kind of reflects our audience in the concert hall. So you get to meet a lot of really interesting people, both through the concerts and especially through the gala.
And it's interesting hearing you both talk about them, because like if I had to sum up what you were saying about the event, it is elegant and relaxed at the same time, and that is not an easy thing to do, because not many events that you do something fun like a wine pull and you're like, oh, that would pair perfectly with tonight's menu, especially like if they're a board member buying it, and they just go and they share it and they feel comfortable and that they can just do that. And there's just something really, to me, those create the most fun events, because you're there for, you're there for a cause, you're there to raise money. Yes, you kind of want to, you want to express yourself through your clothing, let's just say. So if some people want to wear a tux, they can, but if they want to be more cocktail, they can. But yet people can just be free to be themselves, and they can just do something kind of last minute as an addendum just to create a better and fun and more memorable experience for everybody. And I just think that's it, it's really just a unique and wonderful thing that you all have. And I know we're running short on time here, but I'd like to end with this one question. And that is, I'd like each of you to just, share in a sentence, what is one piece of advice each of you would give to someone looking to put on their first gala? And, let's start with Suzanne, and then we'll end with Brandon.
Oh no, that's the pressure.
No pressure,
Glad
Suzanne. No
I'm glad he
pressure.
started with you.
Well, fun fact, last year was my first gala. At the where at my previous job, we did a luncheon.
Oh, fantastic.
So I was like, okay, so I would honestly say, and Brandon will laugh at me, but the first piece of advice is make your timeline, make it early, and make all of your colleagues just follow it. Like, I know it sounds very simple, but I will tell you, figuring out your timeline, and particularly the more you work through it, you'll think of other things and you get them in the timeline, and it really will help you. And if people laugh at you, it's because they don't know how to raise money like you do, and you just stick to your timeline.
That's a brilliant answer, and it's such an important one. And my husband always says things don't go wrong in production, they always go wrong in pre-production. I think that is the perfect anecdote for that, and having the timeline in advance is an essential element of that. And Brandon, what advice would you give?
I would say be true to your organization. This sounds cliche, but I feel like sometimes, you know, it's a special event. I feel like people have an expectation for a special event. But, you know, I think a lot of times it can be kind of square peg, round hole type situation. So I think just really be cognizant of what your, I'm not even talking about mission. I'm just talking about kind of the ethos of the organization. I think be true to that, and you, that will inform what the special event should be, I think.
I think that's a perfect mic drop, pun intended, moment to end on. And it's really just, you know, and with art, it's about an expression of yourself and just being true to yourself. And that really comes through in art more, I think, more so than any other medium. So, you know, first of all, Brandon, Suzanne, thank you so much both for joining us today. I mean, this was really a wonderful, you know, a wonderful conversation.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. And we'll see you in Houston on May 3rd.
We would love that. And, and I will put that on the calendar now. And hopefully I can, you know, hopefully I can make, you know, make it over there, because it's really one of those events I've really wanted to attend for a long time.
So well, I will put so a much. Follow-up on my timeline.
The day I arrive in Harris County. Okay. And with that, the DotComera 2024 Gala Music Salons and Jazz Supper Club will be on May 3rd, 2024. At the Four Seasons in Houston, Texas. For more information, please visit dotcamera.com. And that will do it for this week's episode of Fun and Fundraising. I'm your host, Rob Giardinelli, reminding you to keep it fun, keep it interesting, and your guests will have a great time. Have a great day, everyone, and take care.